Hey friends, welcome to today's episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. I'm your host, Katie Hake, and today, oh my gosh, wait a second, you guys. That's my name, but that's not my name. My new name is Katie Bogenschutz, but we'll get back to that. Regardless of who I am, that's not the topic of today's episode. Today, I had the pleasure of interviewing fellow dietitian Mackenzie Codwell. She's the owner of Feed Your Zest Nutrition, which is based out of Charlotte, North Carolina, but she also sees clients virtually. Mackenzie specializes in nutrition counseling for amenorrhea, pregnancy, diabetes, and eating disorders. If you enjoyed last week or 2 weeks ago, the episode that I did with Megan Miller, other dietitian on PCOS, you're really going to enjoy this episode as well. We touch a lot on just women's health and regular and irregular periods and all these different things about our bodies that I don't know about you, but I just didn't learn about necessarily growing up in school or through, you know, the relationships with other women in my family. So I really think today is a powerful episode to talk about, you know, women's health in terms of nutrition. And we're going to dive into quite a few different topics, but grab a notebook, turn your volume up, do what you got to do, and get ready for today's episode. And as always, we invite you to leave us a review, subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. And if you want to continue the conversation that we have on each topic, you're invited to join our Facebook community. Just go to Facebook and search Fit Friends Tribe, request to join so I know that you are not a robot, and we'll keep chatting. All right, on to the show. Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour, a podcast about all things nutrition, fitness, and life in your 20s and 30s, all from a non-diet lens. I'm your host, Katie Hake, and I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist and certified personal trainer. Join me here every week as I talk with interesting people and experts from all walks of life about their relationship with food, exercise, and their bodies. I am on a mission to help you redefine the word fit, to help you stop quantifying and start living. Learn to stop measuring your success by the scale and find your fears. Welcome to the podcast, Mackenzie. We're so excited to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So first of all, just tell us a little bit about yourself. And it looks like it's sunny there. It's been raining and snowing here. So tell us about yourself and why you became a dietitian.
Yeah. So I grew up actually in Southern California. I decided I wanted to become a dietitian when I was 17, actually. My mom suggested it because I was really into food, kind of like science and eating healthy and all this stuff. I was a ballet dancer too. So there's definitely a little bit of influence there and a little bit of disordered influence in my choice to become a dietitian. But once I got to college, I really did love the science and getting into the nitty gritty of those details. And I love food. Feeding people is like one of my love languages. So it's kind of just never stopped. And yeah, so I went to undergrad at Cornell in upstate New York, which was really cold.
You went from coast to coast. Wow.
Oh, yeah. And through undergrad, I kind of just kept coming back to how freaking cool pregnancy is. Like, I'm only 26. I've never had my own children, but the placenta is just fascinating to me. So I'm just a huge nerd in that respect. So maternal health just kind of kept coming back. And then I started getting a lot more interested in the systems that affect our health beyond individual behavior. So that's how I got interested in public health and decided to do my Master of Public Health in Nutrition down at Chapel Hill in North Carolina. And they have a combined program to become a dietitian. So I did that, really loved it, ended up deciding to stay down here. Just love the people, love the culture, made a lot of really good friends and connections. And through grad school, I made some friends that introduced me to health at every size and intuitive eating. And it just clicked. It made so much sense, especially once I started reading the science behind it all and just adopted it wholeheartedly and decided to open up a private practice here in Charlotte, pretty much right out of grad school.
Amazing. And, that's amazing, yeah. By the way.
Thank you. It's definitely been a journey for sure. And it's not full time yet. I definitely have another job. I work in eating disorders as well.
We're in the same boat there. We're kind of that in between of figuring it out.
I love it. And I like it. It's good experience to, as a new dietitian, to continue having that like interdisciplinary setting and then working for myself as well. So yeah, here I am got my private practice where I see people with eating disorders, intuitive eating, chronic dieting, and then also female reproductive health. So I have clients trying to get their period back, some that are pregnant, some that are breastfeeding, just kind of like a wide range. And yeah.
I love that you said how you kind of started in with intuitive eating and health at every size was like, it just makes sense because I find it fascinating. You know, we go through undergrad, we learn all the science and background and it makes sense. But then at the same time, when it comes to counseling, right, the work that you do, you actually get somebody in front of you and we're talking about behavior change and we're going to talk a lot more about females in particular today. Yeah. It's like, how do we transfer the science to the people, right? Yeah. And this intuitive eating for me as well, just makes sense.
Totally.
You mentioned that you love learning about pregnancy, right? And the placenta is so fascinating, but you don't have kids. And I find that funny because here on Fit Friends Happy Hour, Lauren, who used to be our co-host, she is a mom and we talked about pregnancy all the time. And I'm in the same boat of I don't have kids either, but it's so interesting. So what specifically about pregnancy and kind of that stage in life are you so interested in?
Yeah. Honestly, I think the first time I really realized how interested I was in it was just learning about the biochem behind iron transport across the placenta. It's like this vivid image. I could probably, like, if you made me sit there for 20 minutes, I probably could remember the enzymes.
Like the transporters
still. It's just like burned in my memory. And I just find it really cool how we can grow other humans inside our bodies and our bodies undergo so many biological changes to like protect at all costs this new human life. And at the cost of our own health too sometimes. And I think that's really cool. But then at the same time, our healthcare system and our society really is just hyper-focused on this little fetus and not on the person growing, the adult person who's had this whole life behind them, on their health and their well-being. And the maternal mortality rate in the United States is like, it's really terrible, actually. It's close to third world country levels.
Wow.
So combine that with just my feminist outlook on life in general. And I'm like, all right, this area's got some work to do. I'm interested in it. And this is what we're doing.
And that is a little bit how Health at Every Size kind of ties in this social justice model. So as you were starting in grad school, right, you mentioned you started your private practice right out of grad school, which is for those listening who aren't in the field of dietetics, that's pretty bold. Like a lot of people feel like, oh, I need to do this. I need to have the experience. I've got to do XYZ before I can actually do this on my own. So what else was it that really kind of inspired and molded your philosophies with nutrition to the point where you said, I've got to do my own thing?
Yeah, honestly, like in the maternal health field, really the jobs that exist are honestly pretty much WIC, which is an amazing, amazing program for low-income women, infants, and children. And I would like, if the opportunity presented itself and that was like the best job for me to have, totally would have gone that route. But I did a whole summer internship and there's kind of like a ceiling of where you can't really do a whole lot of individualized medical nutrition therapy. It's pretty standard. And then to challenge yourself within that space, it's really just management, which I do like at some point see myself growing into a group practice and having some sort of managerial capacity, but that's like not what I want for myself right now. Mm-hmm. So kind of the job in that space didn't exist. And then add on the Health at Every Size element. And I was like, I really feel like there's not going to be the job that I want. And then if we're looking at the financial aspect as well, I'm well equipped. I can seek supervision and help from more experienced dietitians if I need it. And really dietitians working for other people tend to be really underpaid and it's not fair. And why not go the private practice route and make the money that I deserve.
I love that. I love how you answered that because it's like, let's call it what it is, right? We want to live the life that we want and not be, you know, I think it aligns with just nutrition, right? Yeah. And this way of how we feed ourselves and how we take care of ourselves. It's let's stop guiding by these other rules and limitations that people put on us.
Yeah.
And design it for ourselves.
Totally. I'm getting trained in ACT for dietitians through EDRD Pro right now, which is super cool. I'm really excited about helping people live a value-driven life. And that's all about what that is. And so I'm just really excited to get trained in that. But even in my own therapy, when I've had a chance to talk about like, okay, what are my choices in life? What are choices that are not aligning with my values and what are, and how can I move towards a value-driven life and how much better quality will it be mentally, socially, physically, overall when I'm able to do that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In such a time where, as we're recording this, it's mid-April and we're still in the middle of quarantine and COVID, everything happening, which is a whole nother topic. I feel like there's enough podcasts and media out there. We're not going to dive into that
it's
today.
Not happening.
Right. That's kind of where I'm at right now. But today we're going to talk a lot more about hypothalamic amenorrhea. I hope I said that right. So first of all, can you explain to us what that is?
Yeah. So in my head, I say it hypothalamic amenorrhea, but honestly,
you're probably right. I don't know.
When I really think about it, I feel like I haven't heard that many people actually say it out loud, and I mostly read it on paper. So whatever,
you know what we mean. Yeah. You'll see it in writing. Yeah.
So hypothalamic amenorrhea is when you are not getting your period for a reason that does not necessarily have to do with some other like physical or biological disease. So there's definitely a difference between PCOS and hypothalamic amenorrhea. They're often like confused, but it's important to get your hormone levels checked by your doctor to make sure you get the correct diagnosis. But in essence, you're not getting your period because your body is under a certain amount of stress so that it thinks that the world is not safe for you to get pregnant. It has no idea that maybe you're on a diet and that's why you're not eating enough, or maybe you're struggling with an exercise addiction and therefore there's a lot of stress in your body, or you just have a lot of mental stress, or a combination of those three things puts your body under a lot of stress and there's not enough energy on board to support a pregnancy. So your body's like, nope, not going to happen. Ovulation stops and we stop having periods regularly.
Explain a little bit. It's funny. We just recorded a podcast episode with Megan Miller, who's another dietitian, on PCOS yesterday. Uh-huh. So I love how these two are lining up. Explain a little bit more the differences between PCOS and, can we call it HA for short?
Yeah, HA. Yeah.
So we'll be here all day just trying to explain it. So explain to us some of the differences between those and why might some of those kind of get misdiagnosed?
Oh gosh. So I am not a doctor, medical expert.
Disclaimer, yes. Like in your words.
Yes. I have like this document that I refer to and I show people, but I can never remember like actually what hormone. So there's definitely differences in hormone levels. PCOS, I know there's more elevated testosterone. That does not happen in hypothalamic amenorrhea or HA. So there's a bunch of different hormone differences. But in essence, PCOS, a lot of the treatment for that is going to be surrounding helping people with insulin resistance and some other like lifestyle interventions. Whereas the nutrition intervention for HA is essentially helping people eat more, getting out of that calorie deficit and meeting their body's overall nutrition needs. You might still have somebody with PCOS who is under eating also. So perhaps eating more might work for the same person or for the person, whether or not they have PCOS or HA. But it's really important to make sure that if you get a diagnosis of PCOS, you get a second opinion just to double check that it's not actually HA so that you're not doing the wrong treatment.
That makes sense, right? So understanding that just because you have an irregular mm-hmm. period doesn't necessarily make it one or the other. They kind of go hand in hand as far as symptoms, it sounds like. Okay, please don't hate me for interrupting today's episode, but I had to let you know that I did open back up the Reboot Bootcamp. I designed this online course specifically for those of you who aren't ready to make the investment in one-on-one coaching. However, you're ready to take action and test the waters to dive a little bit deeper with intuitive eating. This course is 10 weeks long, but it was designed for you to work at your own pace, whether it's visually by watching videos, listening to the audios just like you do a podcast, or jumping in on some live accountability calls with other women who are really in your shoes, experiencing the same struggles with food, exercise, and their body. My goal is to just empower you with the tools to help you feel successful and more confident in your own skin and stop measuring your success by the numbers on the scale. Now, because you're a fit friend, you know I take care of you. So if you go to katiehick.com/bootcamp, enter the registration code or discount code, registration code, whatever, code, Morse code, FFHH, that's going to get you $50 off the already coronavirus crisis discounted price. Oh, and if you're enjoying today's episode, would you do us a favor, screenshot and post it on Instagram and tag Fit Friends Happy Hour? We love you so much already, but we would freaking love you even more. I hope to see you in the Reboot Bootcamp, but for now, back to today's episode.
Why, from a nutrition standpoint, right? And we're talking about, you know, women's health. Let's say somebody's listening to this. They're like you and I, they don't have kids. Why is having a period so important?
Yeah. So having a period and the natural ability to have a period, I should say, because we can talk a little bit about birth control in a second, but the natural ability to have a period means your hormone levels are in a normal, healthy balance. And if you're not getting your period, it's more of a sign that something's off than it is like a problem in and of itself. So if you're not getting period, it means that your estrogen is too low, and that can have pretty serious implications for your bone health, for your cardiovascular health, your mental health. And then if you're sexually active as well, it can have some sexual side effects to make sex just not fun, essentially. So in order for you to live a long, healthy, happy life, getting your period, or at least having the ability to get your period, is really, really important so that you have healthy bones, a healthy sex life, healthy mental health, and healthy heart.
And we're going to talk about this in a little bit, kind of the exercise piece, because I think it's for someone listening who maybe realize, oh, I don't get my period, you don't think much of it, starting to kind of have that futuristic thinking that maybe if it's not affecting you now, there's more reasons behind it where you may run into problems later. So what about if somebody is on birth control? What, you know, you mentioned that. What challenges can this arise? Because how would someone even potentially know?
Yeah. So if there is a suspected hormonal imbalance, maybe you have like brittle hair or nails, or you're really cold and shaky, or you kind of just instinctively know that you're not eating enough, or know that you have an issue with exercise. The only way to know that you're able to get your period naturally is to go off of birth control. And so that's a really, really individual choice. And treating the underlying cause of why your period might be missing doesn't necessarily require you to actually go off of birth control. So it's a really important conversation to have with your OBGYN or your NP or whoever's handling your birth control prescription to just figure out what's going to be right for you and your sexual activity and your sexual health overall. If you really just want to know, I want my period, I want to make sure I can get my period, then it's also important to talk to your provider about ways to prevent pregnancy while not being on the pill or having an IUD or whatever. And there are different birth controls that have lower levels of hormones too that you could also look into for other reasons.
Yeah, I know. I love that answer. So if we're saying under eating really is one of the root causes, what does that mean to someone? You know, we say under eating, how does that look different from person to person? And how would someone know if they're maybe not eating enough?
Yeah. So some symptoms of under eating might be if you stand up and you feel really dizzy, or you kind of like start to black out. Maybe you're not able to do the same level of physical activity as you used to, with it, you're having less energy. Perhaps you're feeling really dizzy just throughout the day, really foggy is what I meant to say, kind of like not able to focus. So those are some like mental symptoms. Again, you might be cold and shaky. You might have elevated anxiety. And then we might see some issues with your blood work, whether that's elevated liver enzymes or a nutrient deficiency of some sort. And then when you go to the doctor, if your heart rate is really, really, really slow, or your blood pressure is off or something like that, those are definite signs that you're not eating enough. And then if you are concerned and you meet with a registered dietitian, we can pretty much tell you right away whether you're eating enough.
We're like, shameless plug. You can call us if you're not sure. But.
Yeah.
I love that you bring up some of the physical symptoms though, because I think when we're talking about, you know, intuitive eating and in terms of, you know, how much is enough and somebody going through this intuitive eating process, many people are so out of tune with what their body, that they have no idea what hunger and fullness feels like. And so I love that you brought up some of the other physical symptoms to kind of look out for as a place to check in. Like, am I experiencing some of these things? Could there be more going on that I need to address?
Yeah. And often, really, really often, whether it's an eating disorder client or an HA client, I really can't start off straight away with intuitive eating just because your hunger and fullness will kind of skew towards the lower end if you haven't been eating enough for a while. And it takes a little bit of time of structured eating for your hunger and fullness to adjust again to a level that's natural and healthy for your body to adjust to the amount of food that you actually need. So sometimes intuitive eating, we need to kind of like build up to it and kind of, we need this cast of structured eating to help heal the bone before we can move forward and explore intuitive eating.
I love that example. I've never heard that. Oh, that's so good though. That's such a good way to put it because, so you work with a lot of eating disorders, find that maybe, do you ever get clients who kind of come in without a period, but they wouldn't necessarily meet the diagnosis for an eating disorder and what might that look like?
Yeah, so I do. And very often it might be kind of subclinical disordered eating. And sometimes it is just like somebody who's really, really active and just trying to eat healthy. And it kind of just spirals downward. Maybe they don't have quite as maybe intense eating disorder thoughts about body image or something like that. Maybe it's more along the lines of orthorexia, which is not part of the DSM-5 criteria, but it's still definitely a very significant.
Yet.
Yes. We'll see if it gets
fingers
there.
Crossed.
But can still be kind of like, if you tend to be concerned about healthy eating, concerned that you want to make sure you're exercising enough, and then you lose your period. In my mind, I still kind of classify that as kind of part of disordered eating. But for some people, it might be a little bit easier to kind of pull themselves out of or with help get out of versus somebody who has a very, very classic case of, say, anorexia or bulimia or binge eating disorder.
Right. I think that's important to acknowledge and for listeners to recognize that there is this large spectrum, right? And it's not as easy as you don't just give somebody a diagnosis and say, oh, you have disordered eating. Oh, you have an eating disorder. Like there's this full spectrum. Right. And, you know, we're talking about the physical aspect of it, but there is so much of the mental aspect that is entwined in this as well. And, you know, we all have good days, bad days, you know, as far as thoughts and emotions go. So the same goes like with disordered eating, right? You may have days that are what you might classify as more severe than others.
Definitely. Definitely.
Let's talk a little bit about the exercise piece. And, you know, we actually had a question on Instagram. Somebody messaged me asking, you know, okay, well, maybe they've identified I don't have my period and I'm a distance runner. Uh-huh. So I have to stop running in order to get my period back, specifically distance running. I think there's a couple different ways that we can approach this, but what's kind of your first thought with that question?
Yeah, I think it really depends. It really depends like what place in your life that distance running holds. If this is something that is your livelihood, or maybe it's helping you get through college, perhaps we can work on the nutrition piece and go from there. And maybe we will need to take maybe a season off if this is really, really important. For some folks, maybe they come to me in their off season. I'm thinking about a current client who's a college athlete, came to me during her off season. And basically what we came up with is like, okay, what are the things that she needs to do to keep her skills up? She's a basketball player, so it's a little bit different, but keep her skills up in order to be able to go back into the training season and kind of just like stay in shape in general, stay physically fit while upping her calories. I will say for distance running, like if we're trying to take you out of a calorie deficit, there's so much food that you have to eat. So if exercise is still going to be part of the picture, it's going to be a lot of food, hon.
Yeah.
So it really is going to depend on each client as far as what role that exercise actually plays in their life, what their relationship with that exercise is, and just kind of evaluating and seeing where we can go. And if it is really important to continue that running for that person, we can try the nutrition piece and see where that gets us and go from there.
I think you mentioned the relationship with exercise is so important too, because you and I as dietitians see this all the time. People think, oh, distance running or loss of a period, that shouldn't concern me. I'm not an athlete, you know, but so many women, especially, you know, kind of in our age who I would consider an amateur athlete.
Yeah.
They may not necessarily be on a team, but they compete and train at a level that is very comparable to an athlete.
Totally. And so like, even if fitness is just a hobby for you, running is just a hobby for you, your needs still matter and your health is still imperative, and it might actually be almost easier for you to recover because it's not your livelihood. So I just want to put that out there that, like, honestly, most people who say that they exercise regularly are exercising at a level that is probably way more than they actually need to be exercising for their health. And it's totally valid to want to do that much just because it's fun for you, or it's a way to connect socially, but it can easily slip into an obsession or something that feels like you have to do it to compensate for something else. So it's just important to evaluate that relationship and continue to explore it moving forward and figure out what place movement can have in your life so that you're both physically and mentally healthy.
That's a great point. And if we're talking about distance running, you know, what space is that hold in your life? Are you running miles and miles a day because you're training for an upcoming marathon or for an event or for a race? Or is it just an escape from something else? You know, are you running because you're stuck inside for quarantine and you find yourself eating more? Like, questioning, having that tough conversation with yourself and kind of asking those hard questions. What's my why behind this? And we talked about before of, you know, living a life true to your values and really getting more from your life. What is exercise doing for you and why?
Exactly. And continuing to ask why. So if the answer up front is, oh, I'm training for a marathon because I want to achieve this thing. But is that the real why? Is there a why behind that that's actually I'm using this to cope with X, Y, Z, and it's easy to tell people that I'm just training for a marathon? So continuing to ask that why in therapy and with your dietitian and with yourself and seeking the resources that you need in order to actually dig into that is really important.
I love that about therapy too, right? That's important.
Oh yeah. My scope of practice, I hit a wall.
right.
I can't do trauma. I can't do past stuff. Like, I love my therapist colleagues for sure.
So often people ask, they're like, oh, well, you do nutrition. Well, if I'm seeing a dietitian, do I need to see, especially with intuitive eating, if I'm seeing a dietitian, do I need to see a therapist? And don't those two kind of place the other? And it's like, no. Trust us. There's enough that we can talk about with food that isn't a therapy. So how do you explain that difference to people? And I guess, where do you draw that line? I love that question.
Yeah, it really depends on the client and my own comfort level too. And I think as we grow as dietitians too, we can feel more comfortable and more capable in handling more and more. But for example, like with body image, like, yes, I can do some body image work, but why should I try to handle it when I know that my really good therapist friend is going to be able to help you explore that way deeper than I ever could? Also, my brain only has so much space for one session, you know,
like
hypothetically, yes, I could help you, but your therapist might be able to help you better. And then there's other things that I straight up just did not get training in. I did not get training on social relationships and romantic relationships and like healing from trauma and all this kind of stuff. So if your dietitian is saying like, no, you don't need therapy, and you're continuing to feel like you need to do some extra work, go see a therapist.
Or if you're working with a dietitian and things come up, like things, you know, that's what I've found a lot working with clients, is that a lot of times people come to us thinking that they're just going to talk about nutrition, right? But we know that there's so, when we're talking about disordered eating and exercise addictions, there's so much more to it than nutrition, that sometimes maybe those layers kind of get peeled back when we're talking about nutrition, if that makes sense.
100%. Yeah. I feel like the difference is that in my sessions, I can help people kind of make those connections, and we can talk a little bit about that and have a conversation. But then it's time for me to say like, okay, this is something that came up, and I think bringing that to your therapist is going to help you really dig into that deeper. And how can I support you in moving forward here? What goals can we set? And how can I help you reframe your thoughts around food and exercise?
So let's say somebody decides that, okay, they want to get their period back. It's important to them. How do you take somebody from that step of they feel like they're eating enough, or maybe they're scared to eat more? What are some of the first steps that you would take with somebody to kind of start helping them eat more? It sounds so simple, doesn't it?
Yeah. One of my first questions, my first favorite questions to ask is, especially if people start talking about calories, how many calories do you think you need? And
that's a good one.
Really blunt conversation about how many calories an adult human actually needs is really important. And sometimes we're not actually saying, like, it depends on the person too. Like, if it's an eating disorder client, maybe we're not actually talking about how many calories I'm prescribing in their meal plan, because that's not really going to help them. But being real about the fact that, 1,200 calories is actually what a 2-year-old needs, not a 27-year-old athlete. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's one of my favorite questions to ask. And it's kind of like okay. And then start moving forward from there. And just really digging into the fact that, like, you're not getting your period because you're in an energy deficit. Calories are not a substance that we need to be scared of. They're a unit of energy. It measures how much energy is in our food. And therefore, when we're eating food and it's giving us energy, and we can measure it in the form of calories. Calories are not bad. Kind of just continuing to instill that. Sometimes it really just takes telling somebody calories are not bad. Food is not bad. You need more food. And for somebody to realize, like, oh, I actually do need more food. Because so often, maybe with other providers or friends or, like, the internet, just the freaking internet, people get so many messages that less is better, and that they need to keep cutting out different foods in order to be healthy. So it's pretty powerful in a session to be able to tell somebody, yes, I'm a dietitian, I have a master's degree, you need more food. And just continuing to reinforce that idea is really the beginning steps.
I think women, when we're talking about in terms of energy and, you know, movement and things like that, I believe there's so many women out there too who don't realize how much they function at such a high level of stress. And we're talking about stress, physical, but also mental stress, that they don't even know what it feels like to operate at their best, right? So if somebody's been eating, you know, like you said, in a calorie energy deficit for a significant amount of time, that may just become their new norm. So, I mean, is there a certain period of time that somebody should be concerned, or how long does it take for somebody to lose their period?
Honestly, it's highly, highly individual. Like, even, for example, the diagnosis of anorexia nervosa used to have amenorrhea as part of the criteria, but they had to take that out because even people with very, very, very low weight sometimes still get their period. On the other hand, you might have somebody in a larger body who maybe they did lose, like, a certain percentage of their body weight. And so for their normal, for their healthiest weight, their healthiest, happiest weight, they're in a deficit and their body is shutting down. And then there might even be other folks who are still getting a period, but maybe their cycle's a little bit off, and maybe there's some fertility concerns that might show up down the line. And so in that sense, it's hard to say.
That's a good point, though, for somebody listening. If you're thinking, well, I'm not underweight, or I don't fit in this category, there's kind of this stigma that disordered eating, or this, you know, negative relationship with food equivalates a smaller body. And that's not necessarily always the case. And so if you're listening to this and it's resonating with you, some of these points are resonating with your story and your narrative, that what you tell yourself, you know, in terms of exercise and eating, it doesn't matter what size you are.
No, you can be in any size, but, like, eating disorders do not have a look. They do not have a look at all. And that notion is extremely harmful and keeps people from accessing the care that they need. And no matter what you look like right now, no matter what the doctor says, no matter what your family says, you deserve help for your disordered eating. And just because you're in a larger body doesn't mean that you have to restrict your food in order to be healthy as well.
What are some of the challenges if we're talking about, you know, somebody trying to get help? You know, I think you brought up an example that I thought of just, you know, the woman who is in a larger body size, but maybe isn't getting her period, but she goes to the doctor and the doctor says, oh, well, doesn't see that it's an issue because their weight is quote unquote healthy. Do you ever see women who run into those kind of challenges, or what are some of the major challenges that your clients come to you for?
Yeah. And that's where a PCOS misdiagnosis can often happen. And so that's where, if you're not getting your period in a larger body, I do see that people get the diagnosis of PCOS, but in fact, they actually have hypothalamic amenorrhea. So that's where that second opinion is really important, and triple checking with your doctor, like, okay, like, how did you make this diagnosis, and going from there.
What tips would you give to somebody who maybe feels like they have been misdiagnosed, or, you know, maybe they're kind of scared to ask for that second opinion or question their doctor? What advice would you give them?
Your doctor works for you, not the other way around.
Ooh, I love that. Say that with like a zigzag snap. That's so good.
Seriously though, like, yes, they have a white coat. Yes, they're a little bit scary. Yes, they're very confident people. They're very intelligent and informed and educated, but you are still paying the bills. You are still hiring them. They still work for you. And it's important that you tell them what you need. And if they're unwilling to follow through, you can find another doctor. And it is not that hard to find another doctor for most people, I would say.
I had somebody else on Instagram. They asked the question. They said, how do I get my doctor? It was something to the extent of, how do I get my doctor to believe me and not just think I'm emotional?
Oh.
And so I imagine that woman, right, who's dealing with this, right? We're talking about women's health, that the issue can be so personal for so many people. And so such, I don't want to say touchy subject, but sensitive topic, right? Mm-hmm. And so they get in an appointment and it's, these emotions are coming up and they can often be dismissed as, oh, you're kind of overreacting. What tips would you have for that person?
Yeah, honestly, that's the same thing, that if your doctor's unwilling to really listen to you, ask for a different provider. Or maybe you do need to kind of like process through whatever emotion is coming up for you in therapy and be able to calm down and go back to your doctor with the facts. It can go one of two ways. Or bring a friend with you, or bring your partner with you too. Somebody that can advocate for your needs.
I think remembering too that you know your body best.
Yeah.
And if something doesn't feel right, like, you live in that body. Nobody mm-hmm. else does. And so feel empowered, have the confidence to speak up. Or I love that tip of bringing someone else with you.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Your needs matter. And if you're emotional, it's not just emotional. Like, it's okay to have emotions and feel emotions and be upset. Something is upsetting to you. There's no shame in that. And you don't deserve to be shamed for that and dismissed. So just remember that your needs matter and that you deserve your voice in the doctor's office.
Oh, that's so good. So true. I love it. This episode has been so informative, so good. But I have one more question before we kind of wrap things up. Let's say someone's mm-hmm. listening and maybe they're on birth control, maybe they're not. They have goals. They're just as fascinated about pregnancy as you are. So mm-hmm. what kind of advice would you give as far as steps from a nutritional standpoint if somebody's hoping to have children?
Yeah, for sure. So it's never too late to kind of start having a good relationship with food. So that's my very first tip, is to dive into intuitive eating, order the book. There's a shameless plug for those two, for Evelyn and Elise.
Oh
gosh, my ears, love, right?
Love them. Love them.
Yeah. They have a new version of their book coming out in June with like updated evidence and all that kind of stuff. But it's like the purple version, the third version, I think, is only like $8 on Amazon right now.
Side note, I just finished their telehealth seminars. I'm uh-huh. going through the process to get certified. And Evelyn just makes me so happy because her laugh, like, she does all the videos live every single time and just has so much. And she sends you probably a million research studies and articles and just this wealth of information. So we will shout them out over and over again. I love it.
Seriously, they're amazing. Yeah, so having a good relationship with food is really important, especially if you're thinking about raising children. Kids model off of you, so the better your body image is, the better your relationship with food is, the better your kids will be. And there's even a chapter at the end of the book on how to raise an intuitive eater. And then the general recommendation is to start a prenatal vitamin even before you get off birth control too. There's some evidence to suggest that like the pill can deplete you of some B vitamins. So it's important to make sure your stores are up just to prevent any neural tube defects and things like that. And then overall, like, evidence-wise, from a gentle nutrition standpoint, I'm a huge fan of Mediterranean-style eating pattern. Like, honestly, I have not seen a disease condition for which it does not have some sort of evidence.
Mediterranean, it pops up every day on...
I know, right?
Somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, but just... seeing what you can add into your eating pattern that might help with a healthy pregnancy. So getting a couple servings of fish a week. Eggs are an amazing superfood. We're learning more and more about choline every day and how that can help with fetal brain development. And not being afraid of carbs. Do not be afraid of carbs.
And notice how you said Mediterranean style eating pattern. She did say follow a Mediterranean diet. You can incorporate, you know, quote unquote diets, but just remove that language. Just say eating pattern. Incorporate some of those foods into your life. I love it.
Yeah. It's kind of like switching the way we're looking at it. And that's why I stopped saying, like, honestly, the research studies do say Mediterranean diet. I refuse to say that just because of the label that our society has put on it. But if we're looking at this from a place of abundance, of adding foods in versus taking foods out, that's where true health, holistically, body, mind, and soul, that's where it lies. When we can add things in for gentle nutrition's sake and for long-term sustainable health without feeling like we're deprived, that's our sweet spot.
Amen. I love it. Mm-hmm. This has been so much fun. I'd love your wealth of information, and I can't believe you're only 26. You're going to do amazing things. So everybody be sure, keep an eye out on Feed Your Zest. Last question, because I ask every guest this question, what is the best thing that's happened to you this week?
In the last 7 days, the best thing that happened to me was that I have a course that I teach with Hannah Turnbull, who's another dietitian, for new dietitians and nutrition students, and it got approved for continuing ed credits.
Yay!
I'm really proud of that. So that's really cool. And there's more information on my website about that.
That's so exciting.
Yeah, dude, like people are going to be learning and getting their CEUs at the same time and incorporating more weight inclusive care. So I'm really pumped about that.
So awesome. So if any of our listeners want to find you, what's the best way to, where do you hang out?
Yeah, I mostly hang out on Instagram. I am at Feed Your Zest on Instagram. And then my website is www.feedyourzest.com.
Well, we will be sure to link all of that in the show notes, as well as Mackenzie's website. And be sure to send her a message, tag her on Instagram, let us know what you loved about this episode. It was so good talking to you.
Thanks, Katie. It was awesome to talk with you as well.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with a friend. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Fit Friends Happy Hour. Talk to you next time.